Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty. As a matter of fact, today we've taken the hotel with us. We are at the lovely Vibe Villa made by the one and only Guac. And today we are joined by Kevin and Will from the Synthwave Powerhouse Immortal Girlfriend. Kevin, Will, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Oh man, I'm so stoked you guys can be here. So a little bit of quick background. Kevin and Will are down here to play at the first ever Family Jam. We're going to have it this Saturday. Well, it'll be past tense by the time we get here. But we will have had it Saturday the 21st at Oscura. Kevin and Will are Immortal Girlfriend, like we said, and they are part of the K The Family by extension of our friend Brian Dendy, who is their drummer live.
Yes, yes.
So we're going kind of what we do is we like to start at the start. So let's press rewind and bring everybody up to speed, and then we'll get them ready for Saturday. So take me back to where music comes into your lives, maybe individually, and then where you guys come together and Immortal Girlfriend becomes the seed we're growing.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, I guess for me, where I started musically, I feel like I started later than Kevin. So I was like college dropout, art school dropout. And around that time, I was still figuring out what I wanted to do. At the time, I was going to Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design for illustration. I thought I really wanted to do like more visual art. Mm. And then I went there, and for like a year and a half, I'm like, I don't think this is really like my vibe. So I kind of dropped out of there. But then I started playing guitar like soon after. So I was probably like 19 when I started playing music. Kevin was like probably like 11 or 12 when he started. So
how did that start for you so young like that?
It's just kind of naturally. Like, our family on both sides is very musical.
Nice.
And so there's always instruments around. There was always like songs being written or learned or practiced. And so I wanted to get in music almost like at 11, it was like drums. That's all I could think about. And then they bought me a guitar instead. And then I got really into that. Then they're like, oh, he's serious. Like, let's get him a kit. And then it kind of just took off from there.
So you learned multiple instruments at the same time?
Yeah, it was all kind of at once. Like 11 was like this boom, that's for me. And I guess for you, it was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, like you said, I think the music kind of runs in our family a little bit, because even for me picking up guitar and playing, you know, I sucked at first like everyone does. But right. I feel like I kind of took to it and I had more of a desire to get better with it. You know, so we'd be listening a lot at the time. We're listening to a lot of like screamo bands, you know, and like, you know, I was listening to a lot of Linkin Park and stuff like that.
Nice.
And so that was for me kind of I saw something that, I guess, another way to be an artist. You know, I saw another medium and I was like, okay, maybe music is more my avenue. Maybe this is my expression, you know?
So when you were first in college and you're doing the visual arts thing, did it immediately feel like you were in the wrong groove in the record?
No, like I said, I went for almost like a year and a half. So it was like three semesters where I was there. I met a lot of really cool people, like a lot of, you know, I made a lot of friends, people I still keep in contact with.
Right.
But for the most part, I feel like when I was there, everyone was flourishing and I didn't feel like I was flourishing. I felt like what I was doing was more of a passion and it wasn't something, it wasn't even that, I guess at the time I didn't even know, it wasn't even that deep of a passion, but I knew I wanted to express myself to the world. That's the only thing I think I had in common then versus now was that I wanted to be an artist of some sort and express myself.
Okay, so that's kind of what I wonder. At what point do you latch on to the creativity? Was that younger and it was just visual arts first, like you were younger, but it was music for you right out of the gate?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a little earlier than that, I kind of probably wanted to be like a pro wrestler or something, like, you know, like something along the lines of that. But I mean, I think there was an element of performing that always did capture my eye, though, you know, and so I guess looking back on it now, I could probably say maybe it was the performing aspect too, coupled with just being able to be creative and express myself that, you know, I kind of, in a way, I guess it makes sense for what I'm doing now.
Right. So when you're much younger, like 10, 11, and you're starting to play, what's some of the first songs you're playing? What gets you into it where you start to think music is going to be something more than just a hobby?
Well, at the time, YouTube was a new thing.
Yes.
And so on YouTube, there was a lot of these finger style acoustic guitarists that were going crazy. And they were playing the bass, the melody, and the rhythm all at the same time.
Right.
And harmonizing. And I didn't see anything like that. So I took a lot of influence from like those guys, like Andy McKee and Antoine Dufour. Like these guys just write whole songs.
Finger style.
Yeah, finger style acoustic.
Yeah.
Okay, so that actually leads me to a different thing I wanted to ask you about, but we're just going to drift right to there.
Cool.
Yeah. How do you guys get such a broad range of influence?
Oh, man.
I think it comes from, like, what we grew up on and what we... So, in, like, 07, we played in the Screamo band. It was trying to be, like, a hardcore band. And, like... Or, like, trying to be metal, but, like, we're not, like, strong enough. I don't know.
There's more angst than strength.
Yeah.
Cannot live on angst alone.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a lot of that, like, but like 90s rap, Tupac and Biggie, Bloodsport movie, like the movie Bloodsport, that soundtrack, like influences are coming from everywhere.
Yeah. Michael Jackson though was like a real big influence actually. Like an artist that I feel like I was listening to around that time and also was kind of pushing the bounds of what pop music was. Cause he was like a blend of different styles too. So like a lot of MJ, a lot of, but yeah, like, so we were born in New Jersey, like, and we moved to Milwaukee. It was probably about 30 years ago now. And, around that time I was staying with like we had an older cousin that we were staying with and he was always bumping like Biggie and Tupac. And so I feel like I was really introduced to like rap then, like when I was like pretty young, but also I just got a Walkman. And so I just started listening to random radio stations and I came across like Nirvana and like Bush and like bands like that. So I always liked like rock music and like just the bassiness of hip hop and stuff like that. So yeah, I guess, I don't know. Like it was just kind of, we're just a product of our decades, I guess, that we kind of grew up in, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Did the rock influence, when you're talking about listening to rock radio, that was in Milwaukee?
Yeah, that was in Milwaukee. I was listening to, what was it? It was probably 102.1 or 102.9. Yeah, 102.9, it was the Laser at the time.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So, like listening to those stations and really listening to like just the top 40 stuff. Always pop was always in the background, you know, so...
Well, as long as we're on the subject of Milwaukee in the Midwest, it's not a city that a lot of people are all that familiar with, but they're starting to become more so now.
Oh, sure.
Tell me what it was like for you guys when you first start trying to play and starting to feel out what it's like in Milwaukee to be an artist and especially one trying to make music.
Yeah. So Milwaukee is kind of an interesting city because it is like either number one or number two as far as the most segregated city in the nation. So... There are elements about that are felt, I feel like. Nothing like, you know, we've never been called names or anything like that, but I feel like for the most part, just where people are and like the types of crowds and the types of music that people are listening to, everything seems kind of spaced out, you know? And for us around the time, when we were playing those early like rock shows, we were playing them up in like Port Washington and... which for us is almost like probably about an hour away from Milwaukee or 50 minutes away.
Which seems weird because Milwaukee's such a big market.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we were kind of playing like these, like, you know, these Legion halls and these like rec halls. And, but we would play to these different crowds. And I think one thing that we took away from that was really that it really didn't really matter. Like if people were there for a show, they were there for a show. And like, they kind of, if you could be some random band like we were and kind of show up, but if they're there to like vibe, they're going to vibe almost no matter what you look like or like even what you're playing, you know?
Right.
I feel like it was more the energy that we're bringing and that's what people were attached to. Even in our earlier bands, like, I don't know. I feel like we always had a special connection with the crowd.
That's a big, big leg up no matter what genre you're playing.
Yeah. So we always try to take that and just kind of run with it, I guess.
So can you remember what it was like, or do you have a rehearsal where you remember this was the first time we got together and we were doing this for real? Was it emo band, screamo band, that era? That was the very beginning of you two together?
No. we did a band after that. Yeah. Like we had a friend who lived up about an hour away from Milwaukee who was dabbling in electronic music at the time.
Yeah.
So this is like 09, 2010, 2011 when like Hurry Up, We're Dreaming from M83 dropped and like Naked and Famous.
Yeah.
There's these like synth bands. They're like, they're very much bands. Churches, probably another one. Yeah.
Right.
They all dropped kind of at the same time. And that to us was kind of a new sound. And we were like just experimenting with synths and like, you know, dude, that it was so, it was very natural. It was very much one step at a time. Cause,
Yeah, but that project, it was called Ari Armada, and I don't think there's anything left of it online, but I feel like we it was the first time that Kevin and I, we weren't in a band with anybody else, and it was just him and I, and it was our first formative years of just writing together.
So, and playing live, too, so.
Yeah, we got a few gigs as that act, you know, it was only probably for like maybe 2 or 3 years.
Playing just the two of you?
Yeah.
So how did you handle playing live just the two of you at that point? Because we're a technological step back at that point too.
Well, it kind of sucked because I played drums and I triggered tracks.
Yeah.
But I also played guitar and bass. So I'd like kind of do this rotation thing and we'll have
like some other arms going
on. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'd play synth and I had a guitar on me and I'd sing.
And he'd sing and like synth bass. So we were just doing way too many things.
Yeah. Right.
And I think at the time we recorded like a couple demos as that band, and that actually led us into Immortal Girlfriend ultimately.
Yeah,
because those demos like perked the ear up of a producer who lives slightly outside of Milwaukee, and we started working with him, and then ended up taking over that studio, and then started this act, this project. So it's a it's a long story.
We're just getting into it, I guess. Yeah. Okay, so when you're making the first bit of stuff that's electronic and you're doing it just the two of you, at first did you feel like, oh yeah, this is the thing? Or was it like wandering in the dark for a minute there?
I think instantly we were making stuff that we both liked. It was instantly. And it was kind of, I think our early stuff was heavy, like Daft Punk inspired, you know, but we were just making stuff and we probably made... It was like a good 3 or 4 songs where we're just putting them on SoundCloud. Like we didn't know what to do at the time. There's no Spotify or Spotify for artists and stuff like that. Yeah. So, so we were just putting this stuff up on SoundCloud and a lot of it was, it was getting some feedback and I'm like, okay, like I think we can probably do this. I was like, these songs are making sense and we were making stuff that we're both liking.
Right.
And, I mean, and I guess that project and what it was ended, but it had to in order for Immortal Girlfriend to begin. But it, at the same time, it had to happen because I don't think there'd be Immortal Girlfriend without that project.
Right. So when you guys were in the band, were you writing collectively with other people or were you still doing your material and just playing it with other people?
At that time, I think the bassist and the, like the other guitar, like they're like more the vocalists. Mm-hmm. Because one guy, he was like the screamer, and then the other guy was the, he was singing, but they wrote most of the lyrics for that project. So we were kind of taking a backseat. I would just write like guitar riffs and stuff like that, and we would just try to come up with stuff together. So it was collaborative in that sense, but we didn't really start songwriting ourselves until like that Ari Armada project.
Right, and that's where I was kind of getting with this. What would you say the biggest differences were when you started to write just the two of you?
I feel like there's more freedom. Like there's no stakes. I also feel like at the same time, with Immortal Girlfriend, we were moving into this recording studio, at the same time as losing our jobs. So we it was like the first, like we just move in, we just paid the first and last month rent and we're like ready to go. We're going to make a go at this. It's a built out space. Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm just going to take over his clients and make it happen.
Right.
Then like our job, we would install leather seats in cars and stuff and sunroofs and stuff. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, sorry, we don't, you guys are done. And it was just like, dang, that's just how I was going to pay to live here. Cause we could live in this space too.
Right.
How
dream is that?
Yeah. So we were like, you know what? We got to like utilize this space. Let's record some music, put together like an EP. Mm-hmm. And we'll move out and we'll be good. Right. And that EP was our first EP, Daybreak.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it kind of just went from there.
So what are you thinking when you get into this dream spot and it seems like, you know, things are going to be good, and then a rug gets pulled? How do you guys tend to handle curveballs?
I mean, I think that's, I don't know, we're out here just dodging like Spider-Man, I guess, you know, like I think every curveball that we've kind of been thrown, we've just, what I'm seeing is like pivoting is key, you know, and like being able to adapt and say, hey, like this isn't a thing anymore. And now I got to go in a new direction. And for me, like at that time we had both lost our jobs. I went back to an old job, which was like a third shift job, which I feel like really kind of cost me my health overall.
Oh, yeah.
Like went out for just from working for many years.
Right.
But so at the time I went back to that job though, but I was also inspired because I was on the road. I was always just driving at night. And so that really inspired the first EP of Daybreak, which is our first EP. But it really was just kind of a sonic tale of kind of just moving through a night. That's the idea, is like from like, you know, early, you know, like sun, you know, like sun setting to midnight to getting through to, you know, to the morning. And so that's really the, like the vibe of it. I feel like it's almost the overall vibe of the band is really just that. And so it kind of became a little bit of a therapeutic release, you know, just right. to be able to just write some. I had zero intention. That was the thing. I think that was a big part about it was I was intentional about making this project. I wanted it to feel very like synthy and synth pop, you know, because, you know, Depeche Mode, bands like that have always, it was always the catchy stuff that kind of stuck in my head, you know. So I knew I wanted to like have a project like that. But I also knew that, yeah, like I didn't have any super expectation that like it was anything was going to work or catch on, or it was just a matter of just like kind of really just more expression and but honest expression. And I feel like it to some level that's what people kind of caught on to. And one of the radio stations started playing one of the songs off of there, and then next thing you know, it kind of led to different, like we had no intention of even really being a live band with this project. And then but then soon after that, I was like, well, like we have live experience. I was like, we might as well just do it live, you know?
Right.
So that's what we turned into.
So how long between when you first start writing things, the two of you, and experimenting with synths and getting into that, between that point and when you record this first EP, mm-hmm. did you do that pretty quickly or did you marinate on it in these late night drives for a while?
Yeah, it was, I feel like that first EP was written pretty fast. Like it was probably like within like 4 or 5 months, you know, because from the time we had moved in, it was like what, like that December, and then till, yeah, the EP was out in June. We put the EP out in June of 2017.
So that's pretty quick then.
And then the radio station, they started playing stuff in August, you know, so then that Halloween was our first show, I think, you know, so that's how that year rolled out, so, you know, so probably, yeah, within that span, under a year, I guess, for us, but we also weren't really new to it, though, too, so it was right. kind of like the whole, it takes years to become an overnight success thing or whatever, you know?
Damn right. So how do you handle the recording when you're doing this first stuff? There was no, you weren't playing drums? You weren't playing, was all electronic instruments?
Yeah.
Well, actually, the first EP Will produced pretty much all of it. And the last song was like a resurrection of an Ari Armada song.
Yeah.
So
that's the last shred of it, yeah.
So yeah, he actually made a lot of the stuff you're hearing. And I just kind of take it and like enhance it, you know, or like throw it, like mix it and like add further production. And yeah.
Is that primarily how you still do it? You built on that process or do you switch it up?
It's, no, I feel like,
I think it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
In the last couple of years. I didn't think, we're brothers. So at first we didn't always like work well. Like I might shoot down an idea quickly and it's like it's something that he that means something to him and it's like, nah dude, change that lyric, and it's like that was my favorite lyric. And I think we got past a lot of that stuff because that can really get in the way,
right?
And like you know, Noel Gallagher and The other Gallagher.
Yeah,
like, Liam. They could have been making money this whole time. And they're like, oh, brother, I don't like you. Yeah. And it's like, everybody likes them both.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like.
Yeah, no, I think we've come to a understanding that at the core of it all, like, I remember one time, yeah, we had this talk. It was probably during when we were writing Ride, which is our second EP. But I remember we had a talk, and we just came to understanding. Kevin's like, at the end of the day, I just want to make the best songs that we can.
Amen. That's to that.
It. You know what I mean? He's like, that's it. Like, it's not. There's no ego. There's no anything. And that for me, I was like, it takes the ego out of it, because that's like, it's not about me. It's about the collective thing that we can do together. And so when we were doing that, I feel like that's when our best stuff really started to kind of, you know, take off a little bit more. And I think the writing process became a little easier. And for our second EP, we were, he would be bringing ideas. He'd have productions where I'd sing on them, you know what I mean? And we'd add stuff to, or there'd be ones that I'm working on. So it's always been 50-50, like pretty much down the middle, you know, as far as contribution to the song. But yeah, I think our process has changed. That was our most that we've played together, though. There's literally a song we were playing the keyboard at the same time together. And that song's called Daisy Ridley. There's like a bass line where we're literally playing the keyboard together.
And you recorded it?
Yeah, we recorded it. Because we were just goofing around on it. But I was like, dude, that actually sounds tight. Like, you play that, I play that. And then we recorded it into a song. But it really became like a unit, I feel like, around like the second EP for sure.
That's cool. And that gives it a little bit more tangible element, too, if you an actual performance on there.
Yeah.
So you hit a word that a lot of bands been bringing up, and sometimes I leave this one alone, and sometimes I touch it, and this time I can't help. You said ego. Ego seems to be like a hot-button word for a lot of reasons for a lot of people, for obvious reasons, okay? In the creative process, I like to call it getting precious. And it's sometimes it's hard when you write things to not get precious about it. Because like you said, this is a part I really love. And then someone's like, it's got to go.
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder if you guys had a moment where you were precious like most people got, and how you get to the point where it gets to be this serve the song first thing. Because you're not the first artist who sat with us and said, you know, we did well, or we did things that we were happy with. Mm-hmm. But once we started to all have the serve the song first mentality, we really started clicking. So I'm wondering if you guys can describe a little bit when maybe that leaf turned over for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was like a moment. I think life has had these crazy ups and downs along with this. And I feel like that automatically... what am I trying to say? You can go ahead. Let me. I'll bring my thought around.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, for me creatively, I do think it happened probably around the time we were making our second EP, and so that one came out in 2020, but that came out
weird time to drop an album.
I mean, absolutely, like super super weird time. But that came out also after, I had. Stage 3 colon cancer in 2018, Halloween, like that year. So I was in the hospital. I was out for like about a month in a hospital, through some surgeries, you know, and was on chemo for like a few months after that. And that for me definitely changed a different mode where I was like, hey, like if I'm gonna do this, like I don't know even know how much time I have left. Like I'm gonna really put my all into it. So that definitely was a turning point. Just not just for only us, just as brothers, but just for what we were doing. You know what I mean? And like to really go hard and like not give up. You know.
Was it a thing where all of a sudden time becomes, I don't want to say more relevant, but you're more conscious of it?
Yeah.
Definitely. I would say it was around then too. And ego, like none of this, like if you walk into this room, you can see that someone designed it. They had an idea, and maybe it's not exactly what they saw in their head, but it's like design. And I feel like this table's designed this, we're like by somebody who created it, right?
Right.
Who am I to think I'm the first I don't know. When people get really big egos, especially about something like music, dude, yeah. you're copying every dude right. ever. Yeah. You're right. copying every human ever. Right. None of this was your idea. You're not reinventing the wheel.
There's only so many notes. You're
not singing. Yeah, it's like right. music gets really fun. It's also a super powerful tool that can go to the core of somebody's heart yeah. that's a stranger and speak to them
yeah.
and like make them feel emotions they've never felt before. But it is music. And I think egos in music, especially when it comes to like getting something done, like I think seeing how this band has affected, how Will's story has affected other people
mm-hmm. right.
makes it a bigger vehicle. Like,
yeah.
I'm not gonna, it's not about me or
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
Like, there's like a whole nother thing here, you know, yeah. like.
So that's the greater than the sum of its parts mentality.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And I feel like I've known that to a degree, but I've also, we've lived it. We've experienced just the effect, not only just music, but my story has had on people. And I've been able to talk with a lot of people, you know, and really connect with that. And, but I feel like that's the sensibility that I brought back from all that was like, hey, like, I'm not just here for me. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm here more. It's not just about me. And so that's one thing when I guess when I talk about ego, that's one thing that I guess how I see it is like it can become self-centered, and to be not egotistical is to be, you know, selfless. And so that's more of who I wanted to grow into, and that's, you know, what I've been working on. But that's also what I see this project as. And even right. when we brought on our drummer Brian, I just saw in him, I'm like, yeah, like I see that this is almost something that like, this is something that could benefit him, and that it could be something that's good to him too. And that overall, then that's a good thing, that if this band is to exist, that it can affect multiple people's lives, but hopefully for the better, you know? And so that's, I feel like also he was, when he joined, I feel like he was also a breath of fresh wind, like for us at the time, because like we were like kind of like doing it just as a two piece. Like, you know, we felt like we had to some degree had not done it all, but you know, we were a little maybe worn out with just how we've been doing it. And I feel like adding like a live drummer and like also having someone with new motivation and like,
right.
really just pure intention, like to really like see the world and play and like just someone who really enjoys music, that helped us a lot, you know? And that goes back to the whole, like, it's bigger than us thing. You know what I mean? And yes. it's like, hey, like, it's not just, you know, two brothers from Milwaukee, but it's like, it's about the community now. And like, you know, we've had the chance to work with really amazing artists and have really cool videos and all this stuff, really just solely based off the music and like people's connections to it and growing this universe.
Right. And that's super powerful. That's yeah. very cool. That's how you know you got something working, when people, it's speaking to them.
Yeah.
So let's press rewind just a little bit.
Yeah.
To 2020.
Yeah.
You're going through health problems at a time yeah. that it is really rough to be going through health problems. Mm-hmm. As a sort of aside, I was going through a lot of health problems at that point too. So yeah. I know being in the hospital and things at that time was very weird.
Yeah.
And you're dropping an EP into a void, or an LP
oh, yeah.
into a void.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about where your headspaces were at this point.
Man, I, yeah.
Go ahead. You can go
ahead. I mean,
ahead.
Those, I actually, I'll let you okay. speak. I'll let you speak.
So we dropped it March 2020.
Oh, perfect
so
time.
Literally,
yeah,
yeah, like, yeah,
yeah. perfect time.
And then, like, next thing you know, we're fighting for toilet paper.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like, a couple weeks later. Actually, COVID for us was kind of a reassessment, because we had been a band since 2017. So it was like 2020. It was like, mm-hmm. where are things at? Like, what do we want to do with this? And a buddy of ours got invited to like a songwriting camp for these TV shows. And he was like, hey, I need like production for it. I'll sing on it and rap or whatever for whatever they need. So
yeah.
we started doing that year. And that really opened the door, like,
yeah.
for just a new revenue stream in music, a new yeah. creative outlet, because sync yeah. music is so specific. It's right. basically a formula.
Yeah.
There's no like If you know the formula, you can just keep making infinite money. But if you don't, then you like we didn't, you kind of have to like
you have to figure learn it out. Like anything, yeah. You have to learn it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so that, it was a good thing in a lot of ways because we had to pivot and we weren't playing live shows. That's how we were. That's how I was paying my rent.
Yeah.
Like have a couple shows in a month and I can make some money. But that being gone. It was kind of like losing the job. It's the rug pulled under you.
Yeah.
But it ended up being good because we wouldn't have ever had that opportunity. So
yeah. So how quickly into the COVID void when your album is adrift do you start working on what becomes Sync Music?
I'm trying to think of when that was. It was...
Was this a pretty quick pivot?
I mean, like probably like all 2020 and 2021.
Yeah.
And probably some of 2022.
Yeah.
Because... It's just we were making maybe a song a week.
Yeah.
And it would be for whatever, and we would just be constantly pitching things.
So what is that world like? Are you making, were you at that point making your song a week to build up a library that people were then shopping to potentials, or you were getting commissioned?
Yeah. Yeah. So we were just building up a catalog, you know, that we can have, you know, thrown out there because there were just different briefs that were coming in.
Mm-hmm.
That a friend was getting, say, hey, they needed this for this commercial or whatever. And so we would just be working on music and we'd make, we were really cranking out the songs at the time. So we'd make it like, cause they need these pretty quick. They usually within like a few days, like tops, like maybe 24 hours, maybe 72 hours if you're lucky, you know? Yeah. So we would always be working on these different ideas. And if they didn't go anywhere, I was like, all right, that's just another one for the library, you know? And so we would kind of just keep doing that. And then eventually, maybe, and it's funny because it was probably like the second song that we had made with our friend. That song ended up being used in a Netflix show called Wednesday. And so, I mean, that was maybe a couple years later, you know, that happened. But at the time, looking back on it all, we just found it very funny because I was like, that was just like a random song that we had made. But, it, you know, it ended up on there. But... like I said, our intention, I'm not even sure. We probably made that for some other
like
brief.
A tequila commercial. Yeah, or something like that. Something.
You know, so it had probably nothing to do with that show, but it's like, you know, the power of music. And also like, I guess that's why we like making music to picture is because you can tell so many different stories with music.
Right.
And even one song could tell a million different stories if you put a different picture behind it. You know, so that was one cool thing that was we were able to be a part of, but also get to see like there's a kind of a fulfillment there, you know, beyond just the monetary gain, you know, and like it's very sustainable. You could definitely make a living doing it.
Right.
But just to see like your work out there and used in another way is just cool and just speaks to the nature of art. And it's, I don't know, like it's, I'm trying to think of the word.
Were you writing Immortal Girlfriend songs or what would be Immortal Girlfriend material alongside of doing this stuff that was for Sync as well?
Yeah, we were. And just to kind of keep it going, I think around 2021, we were only putting out singles and we weren't doing EPs at that time, but we wanted to keep the project going, you know, so we were still dropping singles. And at the end of the day, that stuff can still be like the songs are the songs, and we wanted to write good songs that could just stand for time, you know what I mean, and just kind of, you know, just be good songs. But that stuff also can be, it can, like I said, one day it can turn into a revenue, you know, for you, and you won't know it, you know. So,
how regimented do you guys write? Do you try to write a little bit like every day? Do you have a writing routine to keep that muscle sharp? Or is it something that you guys being brothers and having the experience that you do, you can kind of turn it on and off when you need it?
I feel like it's probably turned in a little bit of that, you know, like
the Avengers. They don't call the Avengers in if somebody's robbing a jewelry store. They call them in when it's a global threat.
Yeah.
So when we have a global threat, we assume position and lock something in.
Nice.
I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you approach the recording process? Have you recorded with live drums? Are you doing everything? You do everything in the box, just the two of you, straight up mastermind scientist style.
There's a formula. It's funny how segmented in my brain this band is. Like with I already know I'm going to use certain like plugins to mix it, certain like synthesizers on, because there's like a formula to this band even. Maybe we'll release it to the internet one day, like the Coca-Cola secret recipe.
I was going
to
say you can put all the spices in but one.
Yeah.
That way they can leave them guessing.
Right.
Yeah. But the process is like, I usually handle the sound ultimately, like we'll create on stuff, record hardware synths, goes in the computer for the most part. And yeah, it's all in the box. I mix in the box.
Do you have an engineering background or did you just learn this like YouTube University style?
YouTube University. But actually it was kind of slightly before YouTube, had really helpful tutorials. Now you can literally learn anything.
Right.
So it was like partially like books and stuff. Like my uncle gave me some books about sound and just the nature of it and harmony and nature and stuff. And so it's all self-taught mixing, self-taught instruments, self-taught performing.
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
Making up as we go.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
So when you went off to art school, I'm going to kind of do Tarantino. I'm going to tell a little bit of the side story here. When you go off to art school, were you focused on music still at that point the whole time?
Yeah, because so I went... This was before COVID. So I graduated high school in 2011. And the last 2 years of high school were online. And this was early online school. So everybody in 2020 who was used to online school, I had already done that. So the last 2 years of high school, I was literally, download the tests. I'd Google the tests because this is way before anything. And I would punch them in. Get a perfect score and go right back to making music. That's all I did for like the last 2 years of high school. Yeah. But I already knew that's what I wanted to do. I'm not going to be a chemist. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make music. This is like, and yeah, I was watching videos on how to mix and like reading anything I can get my hands on at the time. Like, and also just, you have to learn it by doing. And I think our dad, he plays bass. Mm-hmm. And when growing up in the house, the whole walls are humming. So our band, bass is very forward. Yeah. And people like, I don't know if it's mixed right or not. Mm-hmm. It's mixed to the way I like it.
That's it. End of story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how much of that when you guys are working together, do you think, I don't know any way to put this. How much of stuff when you're doing it, do you think about it? And how much of it do you got instinct built up and you're just rolling it out?
I feel like a lot of it, I mean, it's a mixture, you know, because sometimes we go into a song intentionally, you know, with like, we're trying to make this vibe, you know, and so we'll do it and we'll experiment. And then other times it's just felt, it will just be like, I feel like a lot of the songs on Ride were just, it was just kind of vibing, putting it together and it's like, okay, that's, you know, so some songs go together literally like that. And other ones, they take a little bit more. Like on our most recent project of Sojourner, we had a song that was sitting around for a while. It's a song called Mobile. And I feel like it's one of the better songs on the record. It doesn't get any streams. It doesn't get any love. But
why is that always the case?
I mean, I don't know. It's a hidden gem out there. But so anyway, that was a song that was sitting around for like a while. And we just didn't, probably like over a year, didn't have anything for it. And then like when we put on a calendar that, hey, we're putting out this EP and this is going to be on there. We're going to make this work. We're going to write this down. Then the song clicked. It was like, now we can, it was like, we heard it, in a new way. Then it became easy. But I feel like sometimes that is part of the process. The song wouldn't have been what it is now had it been written at another time. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think about that almost for every song. Cause for us, all the elements will be there for a song, but it can go in a million different directions. Or I'll listen to old demos and I'm like, man, it's interesting. Like, this song definitely doesn't hit as much as it does now. And I'm glad that I waited, you know, for the, sometimes even the right melody to pop in my head. And that's just what it is. Like, I don't think there's an exact process for every song. I think every song kind of takes on a life of its own as far as like, if we don't give up on it, what it can turn into.
Right. And I guess that's kind of the operative point there, not giving up on it.
Yeah.
So, and you had mentioned it a little bit when you were talking about you were writing songs and they just end up being catalog songs. Mm-hmm. How do you keep yourself in that frame of mind where you don't have the pressure? Because I know a lot of artists, whether or not they're making music or making films or even taking photos, they end up at points where they have a lot of pressure on themselves to get this right on the first try or do it till it's done.
Right.
How do you keep the mentality that you guys can give yourself the space for your art to breathe? And if this one doesn't surface for a couple of years or ever at all, this is not a slight on our ability to finish a track.
Sure. I think certain songs are like, yo, I have to finish that. Like certain things take priority.
Yeah.
Like you're like, if there was a really tight idea one of us came up with, we'd write it and finish it tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's no like, I don't know. It's weird because like we've made this our career, and sometimes it's like you feel like you're doing the work, like you're working, and it is work. And sometimes it's finding that balance of being creative and having fun with it while also getting a specific job done.
Right.
It's kind of this balancing act that I keep finding myself coming back to.
Yeah, that's an interesting fork in the road you guys seem to navigate well. Would you say that your experience writing for Sync Things, when you have like deadlines or you're writing to a specific piece of film or whatever, would you say that has helped you be able to do that in Immortal Girlfriend?
Yeah, definitely. I think because, yeah, we went through a few different writing camps, and like for that, like when you're able to work quickly in a creative way, but also in a efficient way, I think it brings about certain things that I realized, like, because I feel like it was like the other piece of the puzzle for us as writers. Because around 2021, when we started doing more of the sync writing, I was like, we should write our songs this way. You know what I mean? Because I was like, the way that this goes, I guess we found out it. You can really bring a vibe really quickly if you don't overthink it. And you kind of move, like, it's almost like, I guess when I was in art school, like what they taught me was the quicker that you would do a sketch, like if I'd see you and I would just do a real quick scribble of your outline, in the end, the more accurate it's going to be, you know. But if I would take too long in trying to get your ears and get everything right, I would probably lose sight of the whole thing. And so it's really getting the flash idea down, I think, was more key. And so with production, I feel like that's just a way that we found it to work. Is like, hey, like if you're moving quicker and they're saying, hey, like you're just making choice at the end of the day, it's really just making choices and problem solving. That's it. You know, this sync, they want this, it has to have these, you know, a Marvin Gaye, you know, soulful like vocal in the background, but with a synth line with, you know, hip hop drums from the 90s. And so you're hearing all these things and it's just problem solving. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll take those things. And then this is what I hear, you know? So that's been our approach with that. And I think it definitely has impacted how we write Immortal Girlfriend songs now in 2024.
That's cool. That's very interesting because, you know, a lot of people now, especially if you're working in the box or doing stuff with synthesizers, you have almost limitless options.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you find that keeping your, I don't want to say your options down, but keeping the framework of your vision lined up from the get-go helps you finish without all that deviation, helps you be, you said the magic word, efficient in your creative process?
Yeah, definitely. Because it's the whole paradox of choice, right? Like the more options you have, the less satisfied you feel with whatever you choose, you know? So slimming it down to say, like, we know the patches we're going to use, like we know the, you know, snares and like whatever we're going to use for these songs, it takes a lot of the guesswork out, you know. And there's also songs where we want to push it and say, hey, I want to do something a little more different than what we would do. And so we'll do that too. But I think it gets back to the song because like really the core of it is like, I could sit down at a piano and come up with a song idea. Everything else is just production, but the core, the core of it, like really just like the chords and the melodies are really the things that people are going to be attaching to, and the lyrics. But for me, I write lyrics last. That's how I write songs. We'll find the chords, you know, the melodies, maybe a beat. Then I'll write the lyrics last. And like, that's usually when how we've gone about songwriting in the past.
So you start chords first.
Yeah, usually. Sometimes it's rhythm. Like, I think, yeah. Right? Like, you'll come up with a beat, but for the most part, it's like chords or just melodies, riffs, you know, different stuff like that.
How much of the old rock and roll's day creeps into that? The old emo screamo days creep into that?
I think it's there.
Yeah.
I think even now we put out a remix with Davey Oberlin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He plays live keys for Korn and Five Finger Death Punch.
Yeah.
Which nice. I think is really cool.
Yeah. Shouts out Davey Oberlin if he's watching.
We put out a remix of a song. Or it started as a remix.
Yeah.
He has he's a synthwave act called All the Damn Vampires.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was originally an instrumental song, and he sent the stems over for a remix. We started messing with it. I pitched it down and started getting weird. Then Will was like, yo, I'm kind of writing lyrics to this. And it was dope. And then we wanted to make it I don't know, even though All the Damn Vampires isn't Korn or Five Finger Death Punch, we're huge Korn fans.
Yeah.
and we kind of wanted to push the music to this kind of cyberpunk rock music with synthesizers.
Yeah.
And so to me, our song Moment is kind of like that.
Yeah.
Our song Others is a rock song with no guitars. That's the way I try to that's the way I see it.
Right. That's what I was wondering. That's what I was kind of picking up on.
Yeah. It's people call it post synthwave. I don't even know if that's even a genre.
You can put post in front of everything.
Yeah. Post Malone.
Malone.
New genre done.
But it's, I mean, for us, that goes back to the vibe. You know what I mean? That goes back to I want to have energy, but we want to do it in a new way. And we could probably start a rock band, you know, and just do guitars and stuff, but we like the idea of it's synth, because it's, we're just choosing to go about it. And it also, it leaves us with more options in a new, a new lane in a way. So.
Right. Well, you said a magic word there too, vibe. What would you say the essence, and I want you guys both to answer this.
Okay.
What would you say the essence of the Immortal Girlfriend vibe is? What are you hoping people pick up on it, whether or not they're moderately paying attention or full on paying attention?
Okay.
Well, there's a secret. It's funny, the word vibe. Like, is that vibey enough? Is that too vibey?
Because
there's such thing as too vibey.
Then in Vibe Villa.
Yeah. Vibe Villa. Here we are.
I mean, it's not too vibey in here.
No, we got to
songs get can be too vibey. And it's almost like eating too much ice cream. Yeah. I don't know. We've talked about this. Yeah. We have our own
you know, music theory.
It's you lose it. It was amazing, and now it's if something's too vibey. But usually nighttime, driving in a car, that's the sound. That's the feeling. And that could be heavy. It could be it could be really chill.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that even answers your question.
Yeah, definitely. So the thing that you think most people pick up on, or you'd like to pick them up or have pick up from your music, is the journey of it all, that it's moving somewhere.
Yeah. And I would say it's definitely, it has those elements, because that was our lives. You know what I mean? I was just driving, you know, late night, always out, you know, whether we'd be doing work or, you know, music stuff, you know. So that's definitely a part of the tapestry. But also, I don't know, I feel like this band has had its own identity almost on its own. Like, you know, even before we were kind of making it, I feel like as we started to make the music and as I started to get more ideas, it just became a little bit more clear along the way. So I think overall, I would say perseverance. Like, I feel like we're probably, I don't know, like, we're among many underdogs in the music industry, but we definitely feel like the underdogs in the music industry. Like, no one really puts us on playlists, you know, no one really even really knows who the heck we are. And that's fine, you know, like, there's a lot of bands in our position. And so, but I feel like the fact that just our life journeys, you know what I mean? Like, I was playing shows with a chemo pump on, you know what I mean? And which was kind of ridiculous. And when I look back at it now,
it's very ridiculous.
But, we were opening for Wicked Phase Springs Eternal. So but anyway, but perseverance is the underlying, I think core of what it's been for us to just keep doing this, to be 7 years, you know, later, you know, 10 toes down. Now here we are in the Vibe Villa, you know what I mean?
Right.
In Florida, we're in another state and we've gone beyond our everything that we've thought we could even do. Like, we just started off as two kids in a basement. We didn't have any super lofty goals of like, oh man, we could be playing here and doing this. It was just very much like, we're just going to keep writing stuff and we're going to keep moving forward and see what happens. So I would say that's what I would hope people would take away from just our music and our lives, is like, you keep going. And that's one thing that we talk about at our shows, is to keep going, because even when it looks like the end, you don't know. And like, right, every day that you wake up is a chance to start over, a chance to do something new, a chance to change course, you know, like, and also a chance to get better. And so, yeah, I have a lot of friends that aren't here, you know, that have sadly, you know, kind of taken their lives and stuff like that, that I look back on. And that's one thing I just wish I could tell people more of. It's like, just keep going. Like that, the hard times are gonna pass, you know,
right?
That's life. Life is always gonna be kind of ebbing and flowing, but yeah, keep going.
And the soundtrack to get you through that is an important thing.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Like, I for me, music has definitely helped so much. You know, it's very healing. I feel like I was listening to so much music during really low times, and it's special. It's spiritual.
Yeah, it is. It is powerful. And it's not ironic that it takes you places, both mentally and physically.
Yeah.
So, and I'm well glad it took you guys here today.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about, you know, you're doing the sync thing, your music's starting to get a little bit more notoriety, but you're not playing live all that often at that point, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've played mostly around Milwaukee. Like, we did maybe like a couple of Madison shows. We've opened for different artists over the years.
But nobody really knew you for like the sync material or any of the things that had, you know.
No. Like, we've been, like I said, I think we're just under the radar. That's yeah. Plus, we're working out of Milwaukee. Like, which is funny, because anyone who knows where Milwaukee is, like, oh, like, really? Like, you guys from there? I'm like, yeah. And so maybe that's part of it. Like, we're not in, like, we're from a smaller town, you know? Like, and yeah, like, we took our time getting out there and, like, in waiting to get on the road. But I feel like now is the time, actually.
Right.
You know, like, you know, like, linking up with Brian and linking up with just more people that we've had help us along the way and, like, that we've added to the team. Now is like the time for us to, like, I feel like we're in like more of our prime now, probably, you know. So
when did you first start noticing your live shows were, I don't know any way to put it, but going well, that this is a place you wanted to circle some horses around? Because it sounds like you could still, at this point, if you wanted to, just be a studio project. You're well talented as musicians, you're multi-instrumentalists. Mm-hmm. You don't have to play live.
You don't
have to make the sacrifice that it takes, because it's no small order.
Yeah.
So at what point do you guys decide, hey, you know, I'm going to sacrifice for this?
I think 2020 had a little bit to do with it, really, just because we didn't know if live was coming back.
That's true.
And I remember during that time we were watching, you know, just so many different bands, you know, on YouTube and all these, and just watching like a lot of pro wrestling, you know, and just really, but really taking in the artistry of it all, the showmanship, just the attitude, like all of that. We were kind of really soaking that in. I'm like, man, if we can get to go back and do this, like, we really need to like really make this hit and like really give it a go, because I'm figuring like at some point we probably will phase out of doing live stuff. But I was like, for right now and where we're both at in our lives, we don't have kids, you know, like, we don't have responsibilities where it's like we can really go after it, and we still have our youth and our health. So I'm like, we need to go after it as much as possible, you know? So that's kind of been our mentality shift since 2020, and things started to slowly open up, and you know, now we're kind of out here able to do it in like a more, I guess, realistic capacity, because it is still very tough to tour right now.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. You know, there's so much going on with like the live music space, and there's a lot of talks that still need to be had, and, you know, with that. And,
but I feel like the live show brings life.
Yeah.
I think that's why people go to live shows. Yeah. Like, the music is loud, louder than you could probably get in your car.
Right.
Or you know, so it's they're feeling these vibrations.
Say, you can actually feel it.
They're singing in tandem with other people who are like-minded, who like the band.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Like, the live show experience is probably the most human element of like what we do with all the computers and stuff and electronic music.
Right.
Like, and it's human to be AI, gathered and right. singing together, you know, like, yeah, an AI.
The rise of AI. Like, that was another thing. I was like, if AI is going to like try to write songs, I was like, we're just going to have to play them live. It can't do that yet.
Well, and, yeah, know, so. And that's actually something Brian and I talked about when he was on the show. So we might as well dive into that a little bit. How do you feel about what AI does in the music world? Because you guys are kind of in a unique spot in that when it comes to sync music and things like that, that's where generative art can come into play, and it'll be very hard to differentiate what was a human and what wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But what Brian and I were talking about is that you kind of still hold the most powerful ace in that we can play it live, and that's, you know, so the adage that I've kind of held on to and I like to talk to people about is that AI is not going to take your job. Your job's going to be taken by people that can use AI.
Yeah.
So how do you guys feel about it? Because it, in one of your lanes, it can encroach really hardcore.
Oh, yeah.
And in the other lane, it can't touch you.
Yeah. I mean, that does play a factor in us going live is the fact of like, hey, if you can make a show, if you can make an experience where people can gather together and they can, I don't know, like if you can lift a weight off someone's shoulders, like musically, you know what I mean? Or even just by uplifting people and just saying like really speaking to their soul, you know, really speaking to their heart. I think, AI can never, like, it can't do that, you know, and right. Unless they got, you know, T-800s out here that are up there, like, really giving some passionate, convincing speeches. And for some people, I don't know, like, I think that'll never, like, you know, there'll never be a substitute for that, you know. I think for a lot of people, it'll never be a substitute for what that can do and just, even just being someplace, you know. And, like, I think... that, but the reality is like, it's here and we're going to have to deal with it. And so, but us being the resilient human beings, you know, that we are, we're going to keep pivoting. We're going to keep doing stuff where it's like, hey, like, I think that's what the artist needs to bring back is whatever their identity, whatever their, like their true self, like you have to bring that to your audience because the people that really love that, they can never get enough of it.
Right.
And there's only one you, like we're only on this planet for a limited time. You know what I mean? Like that's all of us. But the reality is, I stress live so much is just because it's that. It's like, you know, like people can't see Elvis Presley now. I mean, they could probably go see some hologram, but the man is gone. You know what I mean? Like, and that's one thing that I feel like we've always, like, that's always been stressed with this band. It's just really just the brevity of life. And like the live experience, like it's unlike anything else. Like, and like as I was going back to the pro wrestling thing, like we love watching pro wrestling, but just last week we went down and saw a local promotion, Legacy Pro, shouts out to them. They put on an amazing show last week. And I was telling Kevin, I'm like, man, like live, there's nothing like it live. Like we watch this on TV all the time and it's cool. And you can hear all this stuff and you hear all the music and stuff like that. But live, especially in a more intimate setting where it's like you just have the stripped down elements and it could still be so fun and so ridiculous, but also still over the top. But also you literally just have human beings like smacking each other in the ring. But it's like, I mean, it sounds like super simplistic, but it has an impact in the way that they bring about their presentation.
Well, you can't auto-tune it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
Right. It's real. Right. You know, and so, but you... live, you feel like that ring shake, you know, or you feel those hits, and it's something that, people have to experience, you know, and so that's what we want to bring whenever we go out live is we want to bring, it's not just a show, but it's an experience. We want you to be, like, feel a little bit transformed, hopefully by the end of our set, you know, from the top.
Absolutely. So going forward now, are you going to focus more on playing live and getting out more?
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of been our goal. So now we're kind of just adding a bunch of dates and doing more pop-out shows and, you know, going to be driving out to more places, flying out to more places. We really want to push this as far as they can go.
Right.
You know, while we still can. So that's kind of in the mode we're in right now.
Yeah, well, and you're in a good position to do that. You know, it's thankfully live music came back.
Yeah.
But you did mention something I wanted to kind of touch on, and that's the releasing of music. You said you spent a while there where you just were putting out singles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always kind of curious how artists feel about the framework that Spotify and digital releases have kind of got you in, mm-hmm. where you have to, shout out Rick Astley, where you have to kind of keep putting out music or keep doing things to keep yourself in the purview.
Sure.
Does that give you guys when you did it, I don't know if that's still your plan, but at any point did that give you the hamster wheel feeling like we're just stuck making content and putting it out, you know, or do you not care and it's really we'll serve a bunch of appetizers and a meal when we get there?
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it. Yeah. Well, we're just two guys, I mean, three guys now, four with we recently got a manager who's helping us book our tour next year.
Very cool.
But I think we've been burnt out, and then, like, you kind of get some energy back, and then re-burn out, and I don't know.
What's that cycle like?
Yeah.
So you get burnt out. It's like you don't do anything about it.
Driving on E, then you push the car. Yeah. Then you roll downhill for a little bit, and then.
But I think it's just been us doing the content, recording, mixing, mastering, mm-hmm. Playing the live show. You know, and I think actually the live show is what brings me back to like. Oh, this is all worth it.
Yeah.
Like, because you spend a lot of time by yourself.
Yeah.
And when you do stuff like this, mm-hmm. and I feel like even a lot of wrestlers probably feel that too, where you're at the crowd, you're in front of them, you're doing your thing, you're interacting.
Yeah.
It feels like you're living your purpose. And right. then that 60 minutes is over. Then you go home and like feel like nobody.
Crickets.
And it's like, not that my ego needs to feel like I'm somebody, but it's a weird life. It's not a normal life. Like, other people have. Normal or like, and so I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with this. It's a unique point in our journey that we're having this conversation in, is all I can say. Cause we barely covered any of the depth of anything, but.
Well, and you know, a lot of artists felt that way too. I mean, Tom Petty was famous as saying, you know, after his gigs, he'd end up alone all night long, you know, smoking joints by himself, trying to calm down and get back to the real reality of it. Mm-hmm. But it's good that you have the live performance and those things that can stave off that hamster wheel feeling.
Yeah.
But what I'm really curious about is how the landscape of the expectations of artists to keep putting out singles and mm-hmm. then do a record and then keep putting out singles and,
sure.
you know, every sixth Friday or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Do you feel like are you ever conscious of those expectations or how they might affect your progress? Are you guys just always kind of like, fuck it, we do our own thing? We've always done our own thing. Here we go.
Yeah. I think more along like past few years, we've, I guess we feel like we want to keep going for the people that are still listening. You know what I mean? So that's really what it comes back to. But the timing of that and what that looks like, I guess we stop caring less about what other people are doing. I think that's a big key factor just in life, is to not get too caught up in, because we're in the social media age, so we're always looking at what everybody else is doing.
Right.
And so I think a big mindset shift for us within the past few years has been just remembering, like, we're going to do things our way. We're going to take our time. We're going to do our thing. But when we do it, you know, whoever cares and is still listening, it's for you, you know? And so.
And that's opened really cool doors. Like,
yeah.
We played a show with Tesla Coils where the guys we worked with, if you hit a C note on the keyboard, the lightning would arc in the note of C.
Yeah.
And so we played a whole concert of that.
That's
We played a whole concert of, we covered classic, like 100-year-old opera songs.
Yeah.
And like updated them with like our style. And
remixed
we did three
them.
Nights of that, sold yeah. out in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Like we've done a wrestling video.
Yeah.
We've done, I'm not bragging. I'm just saying by being ourselves, like we've actually ended up doing everything I've ever wanted to do.
Right.
And things I never thought I would do.
Yeah.
Well, that's important. And that's the powerful bit I'd like to get across. You know, if you can keep that open-mindedness and that flexibility, you'll find yourself in places you didn't expect.
Yeah.
And like the Vibe Villa.
Right. So I guess let's ask you a little bit about that then. Mm-hmm. So I do understand this is your first time in Florida, right?
It is. Yeah.
Okay. So then I got to ask, what was the first thing you thought when you get out the plane?
I want some alligator meat.
I thought I stepped out of my shower or a sauna or something. It felt super, super moist.
Yeah.
If that's the word. Yeah.
I drink the air. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes when people come here from the Midwest, we got to give them snorkels.
Okay.
Like, to try to breathe. So I was wondering if you guys were in that boat or not.
So, nah, feels good. It's beautiful down here.
Yeah.
Oh man, we're so stoked to have you guys here.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. We'll get you out of here on something fun, but we'll do something a little bit more technical first.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to see in your evolution of recording? Now that you guys have gotten a couple of things under your belt, just the two of you, you're starting to get more performances under your belt. You've got Brian in the band playing drums now. You're getting to the point where not only can you play more and go out and be face-to-face with people more, but the oyster of your sound seems like it can open up a little bit more now too.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys see as some of the things you want to incorporate in the next leg of your writing and recording?
I guess in our genre, it can get easy to get wrapped in like just a cycle of doing like the same thing and kind of going into like a circle of like, hey, you know, time to write a new Immortal Girlfriend song, you know? So for us, we still do like to challenge ourselves and push ourselves to say, what is Immortal Girlfriend in 2024? What is Immortal Girlfriend in 2025? What does it sound like? So I think that's one thing that we as creatives, like we don't like to tread too much familiar territory. You know, like we have a general, you know, palette that we were painting with, I guess, so to speak. But it's to kind of add in a few new colors here and there to say like, all right, we can also do this, you know, or it could also go a little more this way, you know.
Well, that's actually a question I would like to ask then.
Okay.
Being that you guys are in a genre that has, for no other way of putting it, a formulaic element to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there are certain times where if you negate one of those elements, then you cease to be this anymore.
Sure.
Do you guys ever find that to be something like you consciously hold on to, we gotta stay a familiar synthwave thing? Or is there times where it's like, you know, we can kick one of the legs out from under this table and put in our own leg?
Mm. I think it's that balance of like not being so unpredictable that your previous fans don't know what to do with your song, but also push it in a way that is interesting to me and to the rest of the world. Because like before all these AI videos, I had this idea for like, I want to take Kendrick Lamar verses and put them over synthwave beats, like four on the floor synthwave beats. And so many of them worked. And like now you can kind of do that with anything now. But why doesn't that exist? If Kendrick dropped a synthwave album, guess who would sound like Drake and his mom and his dog? Everybody would sound synthwave. But we're kind of like, no, I'm hip hop. I can't cross that line. Sorry. Yeah. I got to get from behind.
You know, it's like, and that's one of those things too. If you change too many of the elements, then you cease to be that.
Exactly. But I think more live drums, I want to incorporate more live drums because there's something powerful about the instrument. Like, and I think we could push maybe more in the rock direction. Maybe not. Maybe our own thing.
Yeah.
Maybe we push it and it's our own sound. Like, I'd rather explore that than like, I just want to explore. It's 2024.
Yeah.
This is the only, like, first time in human history that it's been 2024. Like, let's use everything we have now. And, like, I'm not trying to sound like an 80s band. Not anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what reeled them in. But now it's like, follow us as we take this alternative synth
into the future. Well, it's got to stay interesting
into
for
the
you.
Future. Yeah.
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 So do you think you'll add guitar playing back into it, or maybe bring in some of your dad's bass?
That'd be sweet.
Yeah, yeah, shit, yeah.
I don't know. Well, we're just going to keep going.
Yeah, just keep pushing it.
Yeah.
All right, well, then let's get you out of here on something fun. You guys can both answer this one. Okay. If you had a dream collab, someone that you could either have on the stage with you, play a show with, or someone that you could maybe do something similar like you had where a remix turns into a collab, who would it be? I don't care, living, dead, past, present, future.
Dang, I have a few already.
Dang. Let me see. I mean, I would like to do something with Trent Reznor. That'd be tight. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
fair.
Whether score-wise or song-wise, I think that'd be kind of cool. Who else?
Probably Jonathan Davis from Korn.
Yeah.
He just wrote, he writes really good melodies. Yeah. And I don't know, it seems like a cool dude.
Yeah.
Man, both curveballs I didn't expect. Oh, you guys right got on. Such a broad influence. I think that's so cool.
Hans Zimmer. He's on tour right now, actually.
Yeah, and that's you can get into the synth Armageddon there.
Yeah, man. Like that would be it. And actually, I've seen like bits of his tour, you know, just online. I'm like, it's awesome. Like he's an ex-film composer, as he calls himself now, but now he's touring, you know, with this band. And I think, you know, like, I don't know how old, he just had a birthday. I don't know how old he is, but I mean, that's an inspiration right there.
Well, Danny Elfman's doing the same thing.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, where you can score for years, and then it's like, it doesn't have to be one lane, but I think he even sees the value in being live, you know, and, you know, there's something to it that just scoring can't bring, you know?
Very cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Kevin and Will, man, I'm so stoked you guys are here. It's almost surreal to be here in the Vibe Villa, knowing that in like 48 hours you guys are going to be crushing the family jam.
Man,
I cannot wait for everybody here to see you guys. And you know, next time maybe we're going to do this up in Wisconsin turf.
Cool. Yeah.
So
sure, we'll have to get some brats and cheese curds.
Oh man,
it a thing.
I can't make it back home without cheese curds. I got the Packers patch on my man purse, so they know where I came
from. Let's go. Okay. So, that's what's up, man.
Well, gentlemen, I'm so grateful for you being here. Grateful for you doing this show and sharing a little bit of your journey with us. And I'm gonna have even more gratitude after Saturday. So thank you so much, guys.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you, man. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.